Greetings, cyberspace, and welcome to episode 268 of the Double Density Podcast with your host, Brian and Angelo. Double Density is your home to tech tales and paranormal primers. Now, first things first, Angelo, sometimes I get too in my head with the intro. Sometimes I feel like I have to say it a certain way because I've been saying it a certain way for hundreds of times now, and I'm always scared of screwing it up. And I have, though we've not put that into the show at all. But it feels weird sometimes to step outside my body, and I don't know what I'm talking about. It's kind of like a metaphysical moment.
You nailed it this week, though.
I did.
No flubs or pauses. No. You did good.
One of my favorite games is Angela and will be talking as we're recording, and then I'll just launch into the intro, and he very graciously cuts himself off, and it's hilarious to watch.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've learned, I still, like, you don't hear it in the show, but we still talk over each other pretty often in the episode.
We say stuff. Oh, I was trying to do the talking over.
But that's the beauty of actually editing, is you can just kind of stretch it out. It's amazing.
It's like I tell my clients, you know, post-production is your friend.
Brian.
Angelo.
You lost your AirPods this week. They died.
They didn't die. So this is what happened, right? So I had the original Gen 1 AirPods I bought. So my wife was so kind to me. She bought my first pair in July 2020. Used them for about a month and a half. And then when I bought my MacBook Pro, Apple was having a deal where they were throwing in a pair of AirPods Pros for like $100. So I used those for until now, essentially.
Yeah.
And so my original AirPods, I had not touched since September 2020. I may use them for a couple of months. And I said, hey, great. Trip's coming up. I'm getting the static problem with the AirPods I've been using for almost 4 years now. Let me just switch up to the new old pair that I barely used. Lo and behold, one quick walk later, it turns out that the hardware problem isn't based on usage. It's based on the actual model and how old the model is, because I was getting static.
These AirPods were the same AirPods Pro, or were they the matchstick AirPods?
No, they were Pros.
They were Pros also. So yes. Two pairs of Pros, two static issues, yes. Just like I had as well.
Exactly, yeah. And I love how Apple is saying a small subset of those AirPods was encountering that issue. Everyone I know has had that issue with the Pros.
And just between the two of us, we're 3 for 3.
We're 3 for 3, exactly, yeah. Because I was just like, hey, listen, I don't need to spend more money before my trip. I could just use the ones I barely touched. And that I perhaps used for like 50 hours, perhaps. Maybe 100 hours if I'm kind of stretching it, right? But not that much. Not that much at all. And then so I charged them, put them in when I went to go pick up the car to change the tires. And sure enough, the dreaded static was even worse than the original pair that I was using.
That's unfortunate. Now, you ended up getting AirPods Pro 2 like I did. And are you as surprised by how much better they are in terms of noise cancellation and features?
It's a little freaky.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
I didn't think they could improve that much, because between you and I, right, the AirPods Pro were great with noise canceling and stuff. Yeah.
Well, I live in the city, so it's a little bit different in terms of like hearing harsher noises closer. Like, so the bus taking off, for example, it was pretty loud even with the noise cancellation of the ones. Okay. The twos, it's a little bit better.
I notice like how good they are even at letting in sounds you should be hearing too. So that's kind of
impressive. I tried the when you start talking, the volume lowers thing.
Yeah, it's. I still have it on.
Yeah,
I know my daughter turned it off. It drove her nuts. I kept it on for now. It's not making me too crazy, but I can see how some people find it annoying.
Yeah, I could definitely see both sides. And like, I've barely been able to use it because I've been working so much this week that I barely had any time to myself, because I've been ramping up to go on vacation. So I wanted to make sure that everything was good in the hood with my various freelancing and like real day job stuff. So I'm hoping on vacation I get to give it a real test drive. Also, what's really nice is because I switched my phone recently too, and the AirPods are both USB-C.
Yeah, that's a nice thing.
So I don't have to carry either or.
Really great.
Yeah.
I fully support the change to USB-C.
I'm glad to hear that. Angela, speaking of sound, right? Let's talk about the quality of our own podcast. We're going to get meta for a second. And we got a pitch through our contact form on our website that was clearly someone looking for business. And I'm going to read it to you. Hi, Brian and Angelo. I really like your podcast and have a proposal I think we could both really benefit from. I'm an audio engineer and producer with 6 years of experience in areas such as audio recording, mixing, mastering, and production. Below is a link to a podcast that I recently edited and mixed it. The content of your podcast is great, but I think the quality of your audio could be improved. I'd be willing to edit, mix, or edit a next episode for free, as I'm currently looking for new clients. I'm confident that I can make your podcast sound more professional, which should help you gain listeners and positive reviews. If you like my work, then we can talk about the next steps. Question. Angela.
This is insulting, actually.
Angelo's like red right now. It's actually kind of funny. Because you're still raging about this.
Well, he has 6 years of experience. Great. I have like 20 in terms of doing this type of stuff. You have probably 15 or 20 years of doing this type of stuff.
Yeah. We also like headroom. So like, okay, so he sent over an episode that one was from 2022. So that's not that recent. And then two, like if I were to drag it into some kind of audio interface and I took a look at the sound wave, it probably would be a brick. And it actually like, it actually goes a little hot sometimes, I find.
So what do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is that it's like almost like it's too loud.
Our podcast?
No, the example that he sent over.
Oh, okay. So I never heard that example.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So it's really, really like it's overblown almost to the point of being problematic.
I'm really proud of the way our podcast sounds. And we've had guests come on and actually compliment us. Like, I feel like our best compliment was from Spanners, who's like does this professionally, basically. And has an amazing sounding podcast, and he was impressed with the sound. And I think it's one of the reasons that he agreed to actually come on the show. I feel like we actually spend a lot of time. And then he had the worst thing is he insulted our compression.
Yes. Yeah. So I emailed back and said, "Hey Christian," I'm kind of, cause you know, I know what the game is here. I said, "Hey Christian, what podcast episode or part did you listen to and like? What's suboptimal about our podcast sound?" Christian replies, "Thanks for your response. I've actually listened to several of your episodes of the show. I really enjoy the ones about the universe, UFOs, etc. I think I can warm up Brian's voice that matches Angelo's better. I think we're fine. I also think both voices could do with a little less compression," which I thought was interesting because the podcast episode he sent over definitely was overcompressed.
Yeah, because we don't compress that much. We like the reason we like compression is to use it sparingly and properly. And I don't want my voice to match your voice. We want people to be able to tell us apart.
Exactly. So I responded to Christian, like, very nicely. I said, "Hey, Christian, I'll be honest. I doubt you listened to any of our episodes, given that you pulled words from our last two episode titles in your response, right? Is the universe's hard drive full? And then a fourth grade book report about UFOs were the last two titles of our show that he saw."
Yeah.
And then I said, "I get it. This is a volume, accidental pun game for you, and I doubt you actually have the time to listen to any podcast." Then I suggested that he perhaps, like, in a nice way, I was like, "Hey, listen, like, if you're trying to sell, like, you probably want to find out more updated, you know, example of your work from, like, if you've been at this for 6 years and that was 2 years ago, that's a third of your career."
This was annoying to see, to get, but I get it that he actually didn't listen to the podcast, so it doesn't make me feel that bad.
No, exactly. So, like,
now I want, like, for our listeners, if you're listening to this podcast and you listen to other podcasts and you feel like our podcast is suboptimal compared to the other ones you listen to, let us know. That would feel more like a real barometer.
Yeah, someone who cares about us tells us.
Yes, exactly. But I work really hard to make sure our podcast is loud enough and our voices are the same volume or close enough, right?
You're also editing out all of the screams that I do.
Brian randomly screams. You know, like how those goats scream every once in a while and then just topple over? Brian does that every once in a while, yeah.
Angela, I'm so proud of you. So one of the things that, I don't know if you've realized this, but you've gotten better at yes ending with me, and I'm very proud of this because when we started the podcast, you used to no sell all of the time. You never added to the joke.
It only took 6 years, Brian.
Seven years,
Brian. 2017, you're right.
So now, more often than not, you yes and me, and it brings me such pleasure to hear you add to the joke. So thank you.
Yes, and I tried Walk With Me this week.
Yes, let's talk about this. So last week I asked you, hey, you know, could you try? So you gave the Immortal Goldie Hawn's episode a shot.
I feel like it was unfairly tipped towards the whole alien thing.
Okay.
It was a really good story. She didn't sound unhinged or anything. It just came off perfectly. It sounded great. She talked about it, starting her career, this experience, how she thinks there's probably other people or other things in the universe, like we do. And it was a cool experience to listen to her talk while I walked. And it's not at all what I expected Walk With Me to be, but there's like sounds in the background. So you hear them.
Interesting.
If they talk about walking near a stream or whatever, you hear the stream, there's music playing. And then towards the end, at least of this episode, she played three songs that she really likes.
What were the songs, do you remember?
One of them was Happy by Farrell.
Ugh, yeah.
And then there was a Christopher Cross song.
Okay.
And then I can't remember the other.
So let me ask you, like, what were you expecting to hear? Not necessarily of Goldie Hawn, but of the Walk With Me experience.
it's actually not too far from what I thought it would be. I thought it would be more like a podcast. Okay. It's less like a podcast because of the background music and background sounds. But it's just them talking about their life experience, or at least in this case, it was with Goldie Hawn. I'll probably try a couple of other ones. I haven't gone on a long enough walk recently where I felt like listening to this, because they are quite long. They're always over half an hour. Goldie Hawn's was 38 minutes, I think. And it was great. This morning, I went on a run instead of a walk.
What does your run playlist look like?
This morning, I listened to my run rock playlist.
Yeah, run us through this. I'm curious.
So just quickly, I'll tell you what's on this playlist as an example. So Crazy Train's on there, Run to the Hills, which makes sense. I got Enter Sandman, Killing the Name, Zombie by the Cranberries. Connection by Elastica. You know that song?
That's a great
song.
Oh, that's like an outlier, because the other like four or five you just mentioned are pretty like, they're like the well-known standards that everyone knows.
Yeah. This one probably will be less known. Superhero by Garrison Starr. You might know it.
I know the name of the band, but I've never listened to the song.
But then we got some more classic stuff like Alive, Thunderstruck, Smells Like Teen Spirit, Basket Case.
Right.
Song by Big Wreck.
All of the normie stuff.
Yeah. So there's like 3 hours worth of music on here.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah. I really enjoy it. It was a nice little playlist. And then I've got a pop one as well in times where I want to actually listen to something a little more poppy and fun. So on that, there's stuff like Ready For It by Taylor Swift and X's by Tate McRae.
Here, I'm going to pull up. I'm going to just let Spotify load, because I'll pull up my... when I was going to the gym regularly, I... because now I have like a setup at home, but when I was going to the gym regularly, let me just pull this up. Hatebreed, Lamb of God, Throwdown, Bring Me the Horizon, Escape the Fate, Killswitch Engage, Stray from the Path, The Acacia Strain, Kublai Khan. So a little more of the yelly stuff there.
Yeah, but that's okay.
Do you want to keep talking about music, by the way?
I do, Brian.
All right. Let's talk about three simple words in a very confounding mystery. We're going to talk about something that took the internet by the storm this week. And I don't know if anyone else has seen this. I know probably a few of you listeners have. But let's talk about the song, or kind of like the song that's become known as Everyone Knows That, right? So this was a song that was posted in 2021. And an entire subreddit dedicated to figuring out what this lost media was erected. And now finally, we know the truth, Angelo.
This reminds me of something else that I can't remember if we talked about it on the show or it was just something else where there was a country song that was playing and then they finally discovered it was like this Canadian band from Edmonton.
This is a little more niche.
Yeah, and more mysterious because it's just instrumental. And where they found it might shock you, as you would say in a clickbait title.
Yeah. Let's pause for dramatic effect. Angela, it turns out that this was the music was part of a scene of an adult movie from 1986 called Angels of Passion.
It's a great, great title.
I know. I agree. In terms of like older pornographic material, great name.
Now, is this like how do we go? Like, I don't want to get into the too much graphic stuff, but this is like hardcore pornography, or is this like?
I assume so. I assume it has to be, yeah. So one of the listed songwriters was Christopher Booth, and people had started sleuthing around and realized that he had done a bunch of music for adult films. So him and his brother, Philip, put this together. And they both have like continued to work in the industry in low-budget horror films and documentaries. And then, they've remained composers on various projects, which I find very interesting. Booth himself was like really amazed, saying on an Instagram story, wow, today my mind has officially been blown. So people are clamoring for the unknown song to come out. So keep in mind that the actual full-length unknown song, of course, happens during a scene of carnal interactions, shall we say.
So you can't really listen to it without the possible moaning and groaning of other people.
Exactly. It's like if you left your window open, like I live next to a busy street. So if I left the window open on one side, and then try to listen to the music on the other side of the room, and I'm caught in the between the two.
Okay. I listened to like a cleaned up version they tried to make, which is pretty unclear, but
I agreed.
I don't see what the appeal was all of a sudden for this.
It's super catchy though.
I guess.
Well, I think it's two things, right? I think it's the idea of the mystery because I kind of want to get deeper with this if you'll allow me for a sec.
Please.
I think millennials and like older generations are in love with nostalgia, right? So anything that gives them a fuzzy sense of like when they were younger and, you know, before Bush 2 came to power, let's say, right? There's this idea of like wanting to return to that desperately almost. And so I think any kind of lost media that is related to that era of the 80s and the 90s really, really attracts people. And the idea of like solving a mystery and being part of a community, right? Because this unknown song spawned a subreddit with over 47,000 people hanging out in it. And so I think there is a large contingent of Western society of a certain age who are really attracted to both the mystery as well as the fuzzy sense of nostalgia that they get by hearing something familiar.
Yeah, I feel like that's why movies that play on the nostalgia are so popular. Like, did you end up watching Totally Killer?
No, not yet. It's on my list of 10,000 things I need to watch.
Yeah, and I enjoyed it because of the whole 80s element of it and the fish out of water aspect of the main character being stuck in the 80s all of a sudden was kind of fun. And thinking back and telling my kids about how stuff was back then, when I was like even younger than them, sometimes sort of freaks them out because they wonder what the heck I was doing all the time. Because there's like, they seem like, wow, it was must have been so boring.
No.
No, there was always stuff to do.
There's less gating, right? In terms of like the culture you could participate in if you were a child.
Well, yeah, because so we kind of talked about this the other night where all four of us were watching quote unquote TV, but we're each on our individual devices.
Yeah. What were the four of you watching? I'm curious.
I don't know what the kids were watching or my wife. I think actually, no, my wife I know is watching Monk.
Okay.
The TV show with Anthony Shalhoub. Have you seen Monk?
I have not seen Monk. I know what it is.
A detective with
OCD.
OCD, I think, yeah. I was not watching on the big TV because I was continuing my Game of Thrones binge.
Oh, yes.
So obviously that cannot be on the TV while the children are around. So I'm watching it on my laptop. And there's something, I get it now why millennials love watching TV on their laptops, because there's something even better than watching it on an iPad or an iPhone or whatever. Like a laptop, it feels like you're in the theater sort of, because there's like a space between you and the screen. Sort of, I don't know if you know what I mean. Keys sort of look like the like little chairs.
Little patrons, yeah. I can totally, that is such a lovely observation, actually. I could totally see that. I've also, occasionally when Steph is like watching things on the main TV, I will watch things on my laptop, but like on my bigger screen here. And I kind of feel like the same way, like I'll go turn the light off.
Yeah, and I will say that my laptop on the M1 MacBook Pro is a mini LED. And I think it would by far be the best screen in the whole house. I mean, the one I'm looking at right now is...
Do you have a family chat? Can you just text that, no context?
To what?
Just say like, hey, just as an FYI, I just realized my screen is the best screen to watch things on. And then like, yeah, don't answer.
Currently, my daughter is at the doctor's office. So right. I'm not going to like interrupt them while they're checking in over there. But I will mention it tonight over dinner.
I'll say, hey guys,
I'll just put my fork and knife down and just put my hands table.
Yeah.
And maybe just like steeple my fingers and say, I've made an observation of all the TV screens we have in the house. Mine is the best.
I would. And then like, just get up and leave. Right. That's what you got to do. Yeah.
I think we've gone far from where we were talking about this story, but that's the whole point. Yeah.
This is the podcast. This is friendship. It's funny. You and I, like, we've been catching up. I don't know. The last few episodes, I found like we're really on a roll together, and I'm really appreciating all of you letting me know that like you're listening, which is awesome. And then Angela, you and I feel like you and I have been on a roll, so it's been great too.
If we could only get our sound in check and
I know.
And
fix well, there are professionals out there with 6 years of experience.
Perfect.
So we can look into that. So I'm going to end this segment off with some listener mail, Angela.
Great.
So Trish emails us and is asking us a very important question, Angelo. How will you two be celebrating May 22nd, aka Bitcoin Pizza Day? And this is a very important tech milestone. Do you know what that means, Angelo?
I really don't. Okay. I didn't know this was a thing. And thanks, Trish, for bringing it up. But I have no idea what you're talking about.
So in 2010, someone who held a lot of Bitcoin, a man named Laszlo Hynich, traded 10,000 Bitcoins for two Papa John pizzas.
Wow, that's a lot of Bitcoin.
That would make you a millionaire many times over, my friend.
So who has this Bitcoin now?
I mean, if we went to go trace some wallets, we can go figure it out, right? But like, just think about like where that was, where it is now, right? So it's just, and I think that like the crypto craze has kind of really calmed down since, you know, the bubble burst.
I feel like there's nothing more tech bro-y than cryptocurrency at this point, right? There's nothing that surpasses it.
Untrue.
Okay, please go ahead.
AI.
Tell me. Oh, AI. But I don't feel like AI is very crypto bro-y because real, quote unquote, real tech companies are into AI, right? Like Apple's is going to be doing it. Microsoft's into it. Google. Whereas cryptocurrency and stuff, none of the is legitimate the right word to use here? But like but none I, of the well, big tech companies are into it. I thought we were talking about
crypto bros, right? So crypto bros have like sort of shifted over into
AI words, bros.
Yes. Into okay. like figure out how
then
to,
I agree. Okay,
how to
I
create GPTs and things like that and okay. utilize AI to like fleece money people for money.
It's so funny how like the terminology for AI also sort of sounds like marketing garbage, right? Like so an LLM is a large language model, and then I get it. I always hear MLM, which is multi-level marketing.
So you're wondering
why
things, Unique but, and Monet are getting into the tech game.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I get that. One of my newer clients actually is in the LLM space, and it's fascinating stuff that I don't want to necessarily talk about on here. But
is it Amway?
No, it's not Amway.
Oh, LLM. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, I apologize. I should have held. So Dad when joke. We talk about LLMs, I'm going to hold up the letter L, like with my fingers. Okay. And then we're talking to M's, I'm going to do the M.
Okay.
So that way you're aware. Oh, you did the loser thing on me. Thank you, Angelo.
Sorry. It was meant for me.
Got caught in my own web. I hoisted myself on my own petard and screwed it up, Angelo.
Well, I think this is a great place to transfer over to the paranormal.
Yes, let us visit on by. I will see you there.
See you there.
It's the Legend of Zelda, and it's really rad. Those creatures from Ganon are pretty bad. Octoroks, Tektites, Leavers, too. But with your help, our hero pulls through. Yeah, go Link, yeah, get Zelda. Awesome. Intense.
The Nintendo Entertainment System. Your parents help you hook it up.
Welcome back to Double Density. As always, we're switching gears from tech to the paranormal. So this week, I want to talk about some old school television, Angela. I want to talk about Sally Jesse Raphael.
I used to watch Sally Jesse. I used to watch Phil Donahue. I used to watch Oprah less. Oprah was kind of boring compared to those two.
Oprah was all about the guests, too. But you have to remember, one, I didn't have cable when I was a kid. And two, Oprah came on at 4, right?
Yeah, so it's kind of an awkward time because you're usually like just getting home from school or whatever.
Yeah, so I would catch random Oprah bits.
And Donahue, I think, is a little before your time, because I was really young with Donahue.
Yeah. I mean, he was around for a while, and there were reruns and things like that. But yeah, so anyways, I want to talk about Sally Jesse Raphael. I want to talk about an infamous 1992 episode. And I think we don't want to make fun of sexual assault survivors. We do not. So this is a 1992 episode that invites the Snedeker family.
That's a hard
stage.
Name to say. Is, yeah. Brian's been preparing for this name for about 1 minute at this point.
So Carmen and Al and their kids and their niece, right?
Their niece, yeah. So they explain later in the episode that they have 4 children, but only one of them is on the episode along with the niece because they had 2 nieces living with them in this rental, right? So they didn't buy this property. They were renting it because it was split up into different apartments.
Angela, tell me a bit about the property.
Well, this is what caught me kind of going with it in that when Carmen was explaining the layout of this place, she talked about how there was blood still on the wall. There was a lift where you would raise the bodies from the morgue because, oh yeah, we forgot to mention this was a funeral home. And there was still stuff
in the basement, the daughter's bedroom.
Yeah, so funeral home paraphernalia was still there. My question when she said that is, why is this still there? What, like, I don't understand how you're living there and you haven't painted over the blood or
washed
rid
it off,
of the body
mean?
Lift. Or
okay.
when you saw that, you walked in and said, nope, let's go get a different apartment.
I agree. Here's an even better question. What does the landlord have to say about any of this?
This whole part made no sense to me.
No, I agree.
This is not a false statement. This stuff was there. But why move in? Why leave this in? Are people so desperate to get an apartment in this area that they're willing to put up with this kind of garbage?
Yeah.
And it's literally garbage. Like, this is stuff that wasn't working anymore. And like a biohazard. There's blood on the walls. First of all, what kind of practices did this morgue have?
I was going to say, usually you don't splatter, You know, when you're dealing with the like, dead, unfortunately, right? Angela's just throwing blood around right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I want to know what how the landlord sold the house to them. Not sold, literally, but, like, sold the concept
rented
of the house
out. Yeah, rented out.
Why they decided to stay there, right? And then also, like, why did they bring other people into the problem, right? So, I want to talk a bit about the exploitative nature of the episode. So, some of the Chirons, and this is what we were talking about before, some of the Chirons are very suspect, right? So, the first one we see about 2 minutes in says, Alan Carman, and I apologize for the language here, but it says, say they were sexually molested by a ghost. Obviously, titillation right there. And then, of course, Al, and then a Chiron says he was sodomized by a ghost. And then Carmen says she was raped and sodomized by a ghost. Very strong statements there.
They also, on set, had a bed.
A
for
bed.
Them to
so they got,
lie
they asked and, Al and Carmen to get into the bed together to reenact some of the stuff. And they were piping music in.
They were totally into this. Now, the reason they were piping music in is that he said one of the evenings when he was. When he had an experience, he said he heard 30s type music that was coming off from a Victrola, is the way he explained it. Now, could it be that his HomePods were going off?
In the 90s, you mean?
Yes. Yeah. Early iteration of the HomePods.
Yeah, exactly. The protos.
I wonder if there was like an intercom system in the house where something went wrong, maybe. Like if it was a funeral home, there may have been possibility of having
I was thinking that too, actually. So I'm glad you're voicing that.
Where something glitched.
So Angela, they tried to get help from the cops. They tried to get help from the, you know, the clergy, the local clergy, from family members, from neighbors. Who did they call in?
Well, according to Sally Jesse Raphael, they called in the Ghostbusters because that's what she kept calling the Warrens. And I, as much as I like the Conjuring movie and how charming Patrick Wilson and is it Pharma Ventimiglia who plays and like they're great as the Warrens. The Warrens were not like them.
No, the Warrens were crotchety people, especially Ed.
Ed, really zero resemblance to Patrick Wilson, who is a very good looking man.
Yeah. So Ed and Lorraine are claiming that this is a real instance, and then so what I love, by the way, is unlike most daytime talk show audiences. They brought in neighbors. They brought in people from the audience who had very, very great rebuttals to everything the Snedekers were saying, and it was incredible. Some woman was holding a notebook at one point saying
that was the best.
She was like, this, like, when you claim that this was happening, this is what actually was happening outside. Here's
she
a logical
took
question.
Notes.
Yeah, she had a notebook in her hands while Sally was holding the mic.
They also had a neighbor who claimed that their kid was on drugs. And explained to them that he was selling drugs to people in the neighborhood.
Yes, which is a whole other larger problem.
He may have been seeing things while on LSD, but like the rest of the family wasn't doing drugs. But still, I think the rest of the family was kind of being coached, the young ones, to believe there was stuff happening.
Let us talk a bit about that, right? Because we'll drop the episode link in the show notes so that way you can watch it. But my larger issue is this seems so well rehearsed, Angela. This seems almost fake. Let us say.
Someone brought that up at the end. Yeah. There was a woman that was that's had a comment, and she specifically said, "You people sound rehearsed."
Yeah, because while you're listening, because it sounds very prepared, right? And there's this like this righteousness in them that doesn't strike me as the kind of righteousness you have when you know that you're right and everyone else is wrong. But it's the righteousness you have when you're trying to oversell your story.
She was clutching a Bible the whole episode.
I know. So let's talk about a book, Angela. Let us talk about a book called In a Dark Place by a guy named Ray Garten, which is the purported true story of this incident.
So they, you know how oftentimes people talk about how experiencers or whatever don't have anything to sell or whatever. They're just talking about their experience. No, these people have something to sell.
Yeah.
Literally.
So in a 2000, Ray Garten gave an interview with Monster Talk, and he said, elements of Carmen Snedeker's story clash with elements of Al Snedeker's story. And it seemed like everyone was having a problem keeping their story straight. Frankly, I didn't notice until I had nearly finished all of my interviews and began going over my notes, and I started having trouble matching up the details. Ed, as in Ed Warren, told me, make it up and make it scary. So the interview obviously happened after Ed Warren had passed. So obviously, like, the dead can't come back and sort of like create a rebuttal. But to me, that sounds like the more logical thing, right? So if you dive into who Ray Garten is, he's a man who mostly writes fiction novels and, interestingly enough, Angela, some novelizations, including Nightmare on Elm Street 4 and 5. And then, have you ever seen the movie Warlock with Julian Sands? You've probably seen the poster.
Yeah, no, I've seen the movie.
Yeah. So keep that in mind. And he's largely done a lot of like fictionalized stuff. And then he basically has come out and said that, like, listen, like, this is all, you know.
Yeah, and with the irony of him having been on Monster Talk is pretty great, because I'm pretty sure Joe Nickel was one of the regular guests on that.
Yes, so let us
and
talk
Joe
about
Nickel,
that.
Yes, and Joe Nickel, I think, is up there as one of my favorite skeptics.
He also shows up, and he's like very calm and tells Ed to calm down
nice.
Multiple times, and it is hilarious to watch.
Him and Ed are the opposites, right? Yeah. Like, so Joe is just sitting there quietly and pretty much just calls Ed a blowhard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
It was something
a loud mouth.
Yeah,
yeah, a loud mouth blowhard, something like that. And he proves his point, because he's just yelling at him. Carmen just basically says to discredit anything Joe Nickel says, because he's an atheist, as if that would cloud his judgment. Yeah. Right? That just paints a bad picture on him, because that's a four-letter word to her. And because he doesn't believe in God, he can't actually have an unbiased opinion about this.
And then Joe Nickel also talks about how the Warrens kind of made their bones with the Amityville case, and he says that that was, you know, fabricated. And then Ed Warren... gets angry.
There was so much fighting.
There was so much fighting between everyone on the stage, and then once again, like, in the audience, which
is the audience,
great.
Too.
Yeah, like, the neighbor who was very angry about, like, them basically, like, telling lies... got very, like, not angry, but like, he was very, very stern in his way of talking about how he believes them to be wrong.
Well, they on the stage brought on neighbors that actually moved into their place after them. Yeah,
exactly.
They were like the second people, right? Because apparently a woman in the audience she wasn't saying she believed the Snedekers, but she did defend them in a way, saying that when they moved in, there was no funeral home sign on the outside. It was actually covered up.
Yeah.
But when the other people moved in, there was.
Yeah.
And they knew it was a funeral home. But unlike the Snedekers, they had them get rid of the lift for the dead bodies and the blood and everything. That's where it ended for me, right? At the beginning, like, how do you put up with that? What is your thought process in that? That is okay to have in your house. It's not like, look, I have little faults in my house too, but not blood on the walls.
Oh, zero blood. Interesting. Interesting. If I were to text your family, would they say there's no blood too?
They would say there's no blood, right. And daddy has the best screen in the house.
So two whole statements there. Nice job on the callback. I want to take a step back about talking about the episode itself and talk about, like, the concept of the reality TV, or sorry, the daytime TV freak show that is sort of turning to a cottage industry for reality TV, right? Because a lot of times there's a lot of these sort of like sensationalist episodes of different kinds of talk shows. I have an alien love child, for example. Like, that's a pretty big trope that used to get talked about in daytime talk shows all the time.
I feel like these types of episodes always brought in the most audience as well. And obviously they couldn't do it every week and every episode, but I mean, Maury Povich made a whole like series out of this, in that he realized, oh, the biggest episodes are the ones where people like test for paternity. Or one where people have weird fears.
So three things, right? So weird fears, paternity tests, and then misbehaving children. Those are the three buckets.
Yeah, that was the bread and butter of Maury Povich. Jerry Springer would bring in completely opposing views on stage and just literally have them fight
like
it
Klansmen
out.
and persons of color.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was the 90s when it came. And it just got worse and worse and worse. And now it's pretty much gone, right? Those types of shows are gone.
Yeah, the Jeremy Kyles in the UK, for example, are gone. But there are a couple of things I want to talk about, too, that are very interesting. That, like, a lot of the times, people with, like, outlandish claims, right? And I use that term broadly, and I don't mean that in an offensive way. I just mean in a very hard-to-verify kind of way, are often subject to, like, a virtual firing range, right, from the audience. Like, that's the whole thing, is the audience gets mad with the host about how incredulous these things are. Like, you think about all of the different talkback portions of a Jerry Springer episode at the end, where basically, like, because I watched an episode recently through one of these, like, free streaming services, the job of the audience is to make fun of the people on stage.
I'm sure they're coached to do that, right?
Like, for sure, there's a little bit of that. But I'm kind of thinking, like, it's very interesting because, like, people with outlandish claims have moved off from the stage of the daytime talk show, and in a lot of cases have ended up creating reality TV shows.
I feel like that's the area of TV it's moved into now. the shaky cams, the people in night vision goggles.
Because yeah. when you consider that, right, like things like sightings, right, unsolved yeah. mysteries, Factor Fiction, like these are things with reenactments, and they had, you know, once again, sections of people in there that were like, these are like quote unquote like docu series.
They were very well done. There was yes. no schlock, right? Yep. For the lack of a better word, Unsolved Mysteries took everything very seriously, and you knew that yeah. just by listening to Robert Stack's voice.
But then you consider the fact that these subjects then become hosts, the objects themselves almost, of like these spin-off shows, especially like how easy it is now to create a web show and throw it up onto a service like YouTube, for example, or sell whatever package you have very cheaply to Amazon Prime.
Definitely. There's a lot of garbage on Amazon Prime, more so than any other of the streaming services, yeah. I would say.
Also, like at the same time, Tubi, right? But Tubi's a free with ads kind of thing.
Yeah, Tubi's a different
yeah.
ball
that's,
game.
Yeah, that's. But I'm the more I think about it, the more it's that like it's funny to watch like this progression of like people on the stage being ridiculed. I mean, like this time it was warranted. Let's be honest, and I'm using that pun intended.
Yes, good job, Brian. You're ready to be a dad?
Yeah, yeah. But sometimes, you know, there are people on stage that are more believable, that tell a story that is more well held together, that have some piece of evidence there, right? That makes sense. And then to go from there to, you know, kind of leading their own enterprises almost, advocating for themselves a little bit. And obviously there's a money component to it, right? Like, let's not be
definitely.
Like, you know, a lot of
you
these
see
people-
how Ed gets really up in arms when the money thing is brought up, because he gets so upset because it's so close to the truth. It is the truth.
Yeah. Like, they cook this up with Ray Garden, is like the sense that I'm getting from Garden himself.
Ed and Lorraine Warren didn't do this out of the kindness of their hearts. They made a lot of money yeah. from this type of deal.
You know, when you look at some of the people in the UFO space, like your Stephen Greers, right, who are asking people to pay thousands of dollars for a UFO weekend. And then, like, you know, this entire ecosystem, when you really look at it, you know, the Art Bell to book or movie pipeline, for example, right? Having guests on that have something to sell. And then all of these people on these talk shows who get interviewed probably as part of a press tour for a book, for example, right? Because when you consider the Snedekers, they were peddling this book that Sally Jessarella was like showing.
Well, somebody, I can't remember who mentioned it. Somebody mentioned something about a book, and Carmen literally says, oh yeah, that's coming up later.
Yes. Which is just, you know, there's a little bit of an
they're
interesting.
They're there to sell a damn book. Yeah. It all that's they. You know, sometimes people say, "Oh, they didn't do it for the money. They made no money off of this." In this case, it was all about the money.
It was about the money, but also like you got to remember, like a lot of people will create something as a byproduct of an experience. Versus, this is definitely a reverse engineer kind of like the end result is this is what we want.
Yeah, they're like, "Oh, we moved into a place with blood on the walls. It was a morgue. It was a funeral home. We could do something with this."
Yeah. Exactly. And then just how to like connect with the right people, have the right discussions in order to turn this into a media project. Because essentially that's what's happening, right? They're tailoring an experience to create a media project that will then generate revenue.
Did Lorraine Warren say even one word on this episode?
No, she did not. I very barely anything.
Yeah, she just kind of sat there and Ed spoke for both of them.
Anyways, I thought this was really interesting kind of look into like the way in which like we treated things in the 90s and how like for better or for worse, the power has been taken from like these like larger media organizations, you know, or even just these larger media properties like daytime talk shows and reality TV and then molded into sort of a do-it-yourself kind of ecosystem now where you can book your own, press tours and do a bunch of promo in that way without having to subject yourself to a firing squad of people like with like there's a difference I think in an audience between like skepticism and like just bad faith yelling, and I think a lot of the daytime TVs is a lot of like bad faith yelling.
Joe Nickel was the best part of this because he came off as being calm and collected and clearly tried to explain himself. He couldn't sometimes because there was a man yelling at him next to him.
It must be annoying to have to like plug one of your ears to listen.
Seriously,
if only Ed
Warren seems like, yeah, Ed Warren seems like he would be a handful to deal with.
Yeah.
And every time we bring up the Warrens, it upsets me because people hold them up on a high pedestal as being these amazing people at this
amazing
stuff.
Well, I mean, you and I, like earlier on in the, like our podcast journey, like we're kind of neutral on them.
Yeah. And now I'm gearing towards like actively hostile towards them because I feel like they tricked people and they were just not nice. No. Maybe Lorraine was nice, but
yeah,
like,
but
definitely,
I mean, like, you're kind of an accomplice to everything going on, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well. I'm really glad you brought this to me. I had no idea this existed.
Yeah, I had so much fun watching it that I knew that, like, I wanted to talk to you about this.
I spent 45 minutes riveted to this. I did, like, I watched this.
Everyone who's watched it has said the same thing, because, like, it's like, you know, an onion. You're just unpeeling layers of, like,
it just keeps going.
All of these, like, revelations and things like that.
You can't believe this was on TV. And honestly, it felt like a 45-minute Saturday Night Live skit.
Yes, absolutely. Right.
Of, like, them making fun of Sally Jesse Raphael, yeah. Especially even her voice, the way she talks to these people like they're children. It was really weird.
So last week I talked about Late Night with the Devil. This week I wanted to mention something that, like, ties really into this, and it's a 2022 movie called The Out There Halloween Megatape, and it's the spiritual sequel to the WNUF Halloween special. So it's like a found footage horror movie, and the crux of it is a talk show.
Oh, that's like 2 weeks in a row where you mentioned, like,
I know. So I thought it was kind of interesting, because, like, a lot of the stuff that we were talking there were, like, I actually think is in there in the Out There Halloween Megatape. So if you have a chance to go watch it, go watch it.
Put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, exactly. So that is definitely something to go watch. It just made me think of that. That's all I'm saying, is that, like, at the end of the day, I realized that, like, yeah, of course, there's, like, a real version. And then there's, like, a fun kind of, like, more interesting fictionalized version of that.
There's, if you want to delve into the world of talk shows from the 90s, I'm sure there's lots of them on YouTube for you to, like, yeah, discuss.
Well, there's that Vicers, right? The dark side of the 90s or whatever.
Oh, is that talking about the, like, I've never really watched it. The only dark side thing I've watched is Dark Side of,
yeah, so the first episode of Dark Side of the 90s is trash TV.
Cool. Maybe I'll give that a look.
Yeah, there you go. So that's the thing that exists. Angel, I think we've kind of hit the zenith of everything we want to talk about here for episode 268.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you how people can find us.
They could go to doubledensity.net and fill out the form like Christian did. He gave us some tips on how to make our audio better. And of course, Trish also sent us something about pizza and the cryptocurrency stuff.
That is correct. And you can also find us over on socials.
Double Density. What socials are, what's the socials?
Does
that have to do with socialism, Brian?
No, thank God.
Because we don't want to talk about that here. It's all about capitalism. Yeah.
Well, Angela believes in a fascist state, but that's another entirely different exercise to, like, go into, that we don't have the time nor the inclination to talk about here. But yes, Double Density Podcast on Threads, Double Density Podcast over on Instagram. And as Angela said, doubledensity.net if you want to go ahead and click the contact form. If not, doubledensitypodcast@gmail.com. I will not be actively monitoring it. Angelo, it's your job while I am gone to do that.
Okay.
You're not going to do it, are you?
We'll see.
I love having an equal partner in this podcasting process. Thank you for all of your kind service, Angela.
I'll do my best to edit this week.
This has been it for episode 268. Tune in next week as Angela and I decide to actually embark on our own press tour for a brand new book. All about how we see werewolf bunny hybrids, were bunnies.
They're all over my backyard.
Yeah, well, we'll
talk
about
that. There's blood in the pool, Brian.
Blood in the pool. There we go. That's the name of the book.